Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. We have an absolute treat for you today, listeners. This guy is one of the legends of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Australia. He is a pioneer. If you don't know him, well, you're certainly going to know him after this episode. He pretty much is one of the founders, I suppose, of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Melbourne anyway. And we're really looking forward to getting to know him. It took us 200 episodes to convince him to come on, but he's here now, and we really can't wait to hear a little bit more about the legend that is Dan Cherubin. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man. You were just saying before started recording that you listened to us a little bit, so you're familiar with the show?
Yeah, I listened a lot, actually. I like the episodes. I sort of always look for sort of different things in the jiu-jitsu world, or pretty much in everything I do, I guess. Like, there's the mainstream sort of things that go on, and then there's the grassroots stuff. And I like the grassroots stuff. To me, it's a lot more organic and a lot more real, and the stories are a lot more real. Not saying that the other stuff isn't good, but it's just, you know, it gets generic and repetitive, and, you know, it's like a formula they have, whereas I like to listen to sort of things that are more, yeah, and being Australian-based, it's cool. We get to see a lot of people that I haven't seen in jiu-jitsu from different states and things. I get to see what those people are doing and their stories and stuff. So it's cool. It's a really good little project you guys have got going here. It's awesome.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you. So, Dan, tell us how you got started in jiu-jitsu. You started pretty young. Yeah, you were a kid. And,
So I started jiu-jitsu about 28 years ago, maybe. Yeah, about 28 years ago. So I guess the story goes back a fair way. So I have to
go back a fair way.
We got time. So I remember, so the first time I ever saw jiu-jitsu, I was skateboarding down. There's a car park in Torquay, at the main street in Torquay, that sort of goes off to the side. Most people know the Woolworths car park now, but before there wasn't a Woolworths there. And Pete the Bean's house was right near the Woolworths, right near the side of the Woolworths. And I remember skating past with a bunch of mates because we used to skate the main street. And Pete had a garage. He was in the first unit that went down the side of the main street. And I remember skating past, and they had the garage door open, and they were training out of the garage at that stage. Pete actually didn't have a club at that stage, and they were just training in their garage. And I had no idea what I was looking at or anything. We just skated past, and I sort of saw him, went, oh, that looks pretty cool, you know. And it was about, I reckon there would have been about 10 guys in the garage just rolling. And it was just like a glimpse, you know. It was like a little skate past, doing some tricks, saw it, pulled up for a second and a half, looked and went, oh, that looks sick, and then just kept going. Didn't even think about it. And then about a year later, I think I was about 12 when that happened. And then about a year later, I was surfing with a friend of mine because I surf every day. I still surf pretty much every day. And I was surfing with a friend of mine, and he started doing Japanese jiu-jitsu in Geelong. And he was like, oh, you know, I started doing jiu-jitsu. Like, you should come and check it out. And I was like, I lived in Torquay. There was no way for me to get to Geelong. And I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Anyway, he had these videos of these Valetudo fights from Brazil. And I was like, so we went around to his house after a surf, and we watched these old Valetudo videos. And I was like, yeah, I was like, that's kind of what they were doing in the garage, you know, like that's on the ground. I wasn't really too much into the fighting side of it, but I really liked the movement and the way that they were able to control people and stuff like that. So I thought that might be something I want to do. But how am I going to get to Geelong to do it? And I didn't know the distinction between Japanese jiu-jitsu or Brazilian jiu-jitsu or anything at that stage. I was a full newbie. I had no idea. And then about, I reckon, probably like 6 months later, I was skating again out the back of Quicksilver. And Pete had moved here from his garage. Pete the Bean had moved from the garage up to this little warehouse in the back of Quicksilver. And I remember skating up, and I was just skating out the back, and there was just a door that said jiu-jitsu on it. And I was like, oh, jiu-jitsu, but it's just spelt J-I-U instead of J-U. So I pushed the door open to have a look, and it was literally just a doorway that opened straight onto the mat. And there was about 10 guys in there, Roland. And so I walked in, and, like, you literally had to take your shoes off and just hop onto the mat. There was no sort of reception or anything. And, yeah, I sat against the wall, and I watched for, like, a week, I reckon. I went in and out for, like, a week. I was like, this is sick. This is what I want to do. But I was 13 at the time, and there was only guys training that were, like, 26, 28-year-old guys training. So I was a lot younger. And the room was so small that basically I was kind of told, like, wasn't directly told, but was kind of like, hey, you either got to train or you got to piss off because there's not enough room.
Yeah.
And I was like, right. So I started training and put a gi on and started doing jiu-jitsu. And that was the first club I trained in. It was probably like the original first club in Australia doing 100% jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
That's amazing. So, like, you were a jiu-jitsu for the first week, right? You were like, like a kid goes and hangs around in a video. Okay. That's what I'm imagining here, right? Like, you're hanging around the older kids. Trying to get a quarter, but did you want to roll then, and no one would invite you, or did you just fascinated?
I was pretty timid. I was pretty timid, so I was kind of like, I think they'd offered me to roll, and I was like, oh nah, yeah. I've always been a pretty nervous person, I guess. Like when it comes to I've always sort of had anxiety and stuff like that from a young age.
Yeah.
So, even before I started jiu-jitsu, I used to go to surf competitions and. I would go to the final at surf comp, and then I would get to the final, and then I'd just run off down the beach just before the heat would start. And my dad would run after me, and he'd wave me in, and he'd go, you're surfing a final. Come on. And I'd have to run back up the beach and paddle back out. And so, cause it'd just get too much for me. And I'd be like, I don't want to do this. You know, I'd rather just go down the peak down the beach and just go surf by myself.
Yeah.
And, So I guess it was more me than anything else. Like, they were super friendly. Everybody in the club was really friendly. And there's some names in that club, actually, that people would not know at all, who were kind of like the foundation guys of jiu-jitsu, who don't train jiu-jitsu anymore.
Wow.
And, there was a couple of guys like Pete Smith and Daniel Tregoning, a few guys like that that were getting around, who have sort of been lost to the time, you know, they've been lost in time, but they were real, they were there before I was there. Wow. You know, so they're real, real pioneer guys. They were as soon as Pete got back from Brazil, they were training with Pete the next day, sort of thing. Yeah.
You might have been the first.
So they were really nice. And I just was kind of like, oh, I don't know. I don't really want to train. They're all too old and blah, blah. And then as soon as I got on the mat with them, it was like any other, you know, it's like a kid gets on the mat, teenager, and they're kind of like, you know, they just helped me out and started teaching me. But it was a bit more brutal back then, I guess. It was a lot more brutal back then. They didn't care if you're a kid or not.
Yeah.
You're a pretty big unit, but were you a bigger kid as well? Like, you were similar size to them, or you were quite a bit smaller?
No, my first ever jiu-jitsu competition, I've still got the trophy, and it was under 55 kilos.
Wow.
So I was pretty skinny. I was a little skinny. I was kind of tall, really flexible and wiry and really skinny. Yeah. So a lot different to today. Is it still got the tall and I'm still flexible, but I'm not as skinny as I used to be. That's for sure.
Like, this is going back a fair, how old are you now, brother?
I'm 42.
Okay. Yeah. But is it possible you were the first jiu-jitsu child student in Australia? I don't know.
I believe I was, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was the youngest. I think I was the youngest blue belt at 16 I was the youngest person in Australia to get a blue belt at 16.
Wow.
So I trained 3 years to get a blue, and then I trained another 3 years to get a purple belt.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I was the youngest guy training at that time, yeah.
Unbelievable.
And when you were a blue belt, you went over
absolutely smashed.
Yeah. I don't know about that, because rumor has it when you went over to Brazil as a blue belt that no one or hardly anyone could pass your guard, the Brazilians. Is that true?
I think when I went to Brazil, I was doing all right against the purple blues and some of the purple belts. So I was handling myself pretty well with most of the blue belts over there. So I went to Brazil 16, I think maybe 16, early 17 years old. Yeah. Mm. And, I trained at Gracie Barra at Barra Tijuca. It was, that was super, like that was a crazy experience in jiu-jitsu, because when we got there, Gracie Baja wasn't what it is today with franchising. It was one club, and they had some franchising going on, but it was really one club and everybody was at that club. So when we rocked up, there would have been like three or four world champions training on the mat, black belt world champions. Hein Gracie was training. There was a lot of guys on the mat. At that year was 2000. Hegan Machado was on the mat training. Nino Chambre, like, yeah, Peter Pano. It was like a walk in, and it was kind of like starstruck, you know. Even Hoyler came down one or two days and watched training at Gracie Baja when we were there. And so that was pretty cool. And Hodger was there as a blue belt. Hodger was always he was just phenomenal. Even at a blue belt, he was tapping some black belts and stuff. I was doing okay against the blues, and then the purple belts, it was sort of like 50-50. Yeah.
Amazing. How was that received, Dan, for you as a gringo in their home country to be, you know, a 16-year-old that's matching it with all the blue belts, let alone some of the purple belts? Like, how did they respond to that?
Yeah, I remember talking to Pete about it, actually, just briefly about it, and he was saying that a lot of the guys were like, oh, you know, this guy's got a game like really similar to like a guy called Holetta, that was cool for me, because growing up, he was kind of like my idol in jiu-jitsu. You know, he was sort of probably, apart from Pete, the biggest inspiration in my jiu-jitsu at the time. So, like Holetta, it means like the spinning of something that spins, like a roulette table or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of the first guy that started inverting and things like that. He was inverting. He was doing a lot of inverted guard and things like that. And a lot of people hadn't seen that yet. That was sort of developing into jiu-jitsu, especially in Australia. They hadn't really been, not a lot of guys were doing that and had seen that stuff. And that's where I sort of wanted to go with jiu-jitsu. I didn't really want to go down the path of like the back in those days, it was very passing orientated. The guards were not as developed as the passing was, and the guards were catching up to the passing. And I really resonated with his style of jiu-jitsu and started to invert a lot and things like that. So they were like, oh, you know, he's got a really good inverted game and blah, blah. And yeah, I was very much, but also out of necessity, right? Like being the smallest and the youngest against guys that are stronger, bigger, and heavier, I just had to play guard. It wasn't really a choice. It was more just like, yeah.
So you've developed,
put me on my back and
into a big guy. Do you still invert and do all this stuff now that you're a
big guy? Yeah. I still play like I still invert and everything like that. Yeah. Mm. So I still play my guard the same as I played like when I was a kid. I've never changed. Because I grew up with it and I just kept doing it, my game is, like birambolos and inverted guard, like, you know, helicopter sweeps and getting upside down and stuff like that. That's the fun part, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the fun part.
When you're on the delivering, not so much when you're on the receiving. It's like
I think it's important too, like going from like, becoming an instructor is super important that you've got to be able to understand those things too, right? Because jiu-jitsu is such a spherical thing. It's not a lineal. It's lineal in its thinking of positional dominance and stuff, but it's very spherical when you start to look at it. It's like you know, like a ball rolling around, and understanding how the concepts work facing upright is one thing, and then learning how they work upside down is a really unique process to have too. So I think it's like, yeah, I think as an instructor, you need to keep developing and developing and developing those skills. You can't let those skills wane back and sort of fall onto your what you like to do. You have like, I like inverting and stuff, but it's like you need to, you know, you've got to keep playing different positions and evolving your game in different areas, because you're no longer learning jiu-jitsu. You are learning jiu-jitsu for your own capacity to be better, but you also got to learn to understand what the new, I guess, modern style of jiu-jitsu is. Yeah. So you can pass those skills on and understand what people are talking about and things like that, you know.
Beautiful.
That's the beauty of it. It always keeps evolving.
Yeah.
Dan, There was a period there, I think it was towards the end of your teenage years, where you sort of lost touch with jiu-jitsu and then you came back to it. Can you talk to us a bit about that? You had a bit of a
I was training pretty much like 6 years flat out, like, and just from being a kid all the way through to my purple belt. I competed a couple of times at purple belt, and I sort of just got to like a young age where I was like, I want to party a little bit more. I want to, you know, chase girls and things like that, do what everybody else is doing, not just be in a jiu-jitsu gym every day, you know. So I sort of did that for a while. But that belt, the purple belt, and that era was, it was only about 2 years, and I was still training, but not training as hard as I was training for competition and stuff. But it was really beneficial to me because I felt like I learned a lot about the principles of the art. I got to push. When you're competing, it's very linear. It's very like this. You need to sort of hone in on what you do well, and then you have to have a process of how to win tournaments. You've competed, Kim. You know, you got to narrow your training and then your focus, and you start to, so you can win as many matches as possible. But when you're not competing, you need to have something that's like something that keeps you going when you're training. And even though I was having a bit of a break for a few years, I was on purple belt for nearly, I think it was like 6 years. So I did was I tried to push the principles as far out as I could. And then I basically tried to break the principles, you know, like I would push them as far as I could before they stopped working. And then I would bring them back in slowly and start to see where they would start to work and start to break, you know, like a gray area. And then I would try and lap other principles over the top to strengthen them in those areas to see where that would go. So I tried to collage different principles together to try to see. So it was just experimenting really with different, like, can I stick this principle with this principle? How does that work? Are that breaks? All right, if I bring it back over here and I bring this one in here and I reinforce it with this under here, does that work here? And how does that work? And what patterns of the body does that create? And how do those patterns now frame off into different areas of jiu-jitsu and different pathways to sort of transition to different positions, if that makes sense,
absolutely,
if I'm explaining that. So that was sort of like an experimental stage. It was almost like my early 20s, and I was experimenting in life and experimenting in jiu-jitsu. It kind of fit together really well.
That's awesome, man. and as a six-year purple belt, it gives me hope to see that I can still make it.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's the thing. Like, people want to get through belts nowadays. It's like a thing, isn't it? You know, there's all these things like get your belt real quick and that. But I kind of believe in, like, you know, like, I try to give everybody in the club DC, I try to give them, I want them to be the best in the belt that they're in. But it doesn't mean that they have to be performing the best in like competition or anything, but understanding the most jiu-jitsu that they can understand in each belt. And sometimes it takes time, you know. And
absolutely. Yeah. But I can really relate. Like, I do know for myself, I'm experimenting. Like, I've never experimented so much with my jiu-jitsu. And it really does feel like it's at that part of the journey, but I am at the right part of the journey, because it is a very experimental phase. Like, I feel like I really understand it now, and I'm creating now, not just following instructionals, you know, and that's a beautiful thing. So yeah, thank you for.
Well, I think too, you know, if you relate jiu-jitsu to things like, I guess like painting or something like that, where you go and you start learning how to paint, someone teaches you how to do the strokes and the different, how to highlight and how to put shades in and things like that, right? They're kind of like our principles. And then as you learn those things, you become more comfortable with them and you understand how to apply them on the canvas, you now get to choose what you want to paint and how you want to set the lighting and how you want to, you know, so that's where the organicness of it comes in, where it's like, you know, you're enjoying that phase now, I guess, because you've learned enough jiu-jitsu to be able to sort of branch out some of these principles on your own. And now you get to sort of put your own flavor on it and, you know, in your own individuality onto it, you know, that's what jiu-jitsu, that's what I believe the spirit of jiu-jitsu is that, you know.
Love it, man.
Among other things,
And Dan, when you were a blue belt, you lost a close final or a semi-final against Hodger Gracie. Was that at Worlds? Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So in Brazil, I competed at the Worlds. I fought four times. So that was a blue belt. So the interesting thing was that me and Hodger are about Well, at the time, we were the same weight, same height, and he's 1 month. He's exactly 1 month earlier. So I'm 26th of November. He's like the 26th of October.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure around about that anyway. But we competed in adults. So there was a juvenile blue belt. We competed adults. That same year, Lovato actually competed and got third in the worlds, but he was competing in the juvenile. So we were all the same age. So we went adult. So yeah, I had three fights. I won three by triangle and then fought Hodger in the semifinals and lost on points. Yeah.
Amazing.
but to be fair, Hodger was unbelievable he was training in the club as a blue belt. He was like murdering a lot of guys, a lot bigger and a lot like guys that were smashing me in the club. He was just handling quite easy.
Mm.
Yeah. And same style as he, pretty much the same style that he had at black belt.
Mm.
You know, so beautiful, simplistic jiu-jitsu he has, you know?
Amazing. You talked about your anxiety earlier on in the show, and definitely I've dealt with that as well through my jiu-jitsu journey. It's getting better. Like jiu-jitsu, I've got to say, has contributed greatly to the lowering of my anxiety. But what was your experience of that? Did jiu-jitsu help you in this area and the competing, or did it heighten this for you, especially things like worlds?
Yeah, I've always struggled with anxiety. It's always been a thing. I wouldn't say struggled with it, actually. I've always had it. But it's always been something I've seen as a thing that I think it's like I treat it like it's a jiu-jitsu competition. So like every time it starts to rear up, it's like me and the anxiety have this battle and I always win.
Cool.
You know, and every time I win, I just like get a little stronger and it's like, dude, you know, like I've fought you 20 times and I've beat you 20 times. Like, stop. Yeah. Why do you keep coming to challenging me? Right. Like go away for a little while, you know? And, in competition, it was really hard for me to compete. I hated compete. I didn't hate compete. I love competing, but it wasn't until I got in the moment of competing that the anxiety would go away. So I had different ways of dealing with it.
Mm.
But once I got into the moment, I'd slap hands and the ref would go, then everything would just fall away. It was like it would just fall off me. And then in the moment, you live in the moment, and then because anxiety really broken down into the simplest form, it's just worrying about something in the future or something in the past.
Yeah.
And when we're in the moment, it goes away. And so it's learning how to understand that it's just something in the future and something in the past, and you can't control what's in the past and you can't control what's in the future, but you can control what's right now. So, yeah, competing it was hard because of the anxiety, but also it made me much stronger to fight the anxiety and, you know, see how small it actually is in my life compared to the rest of my life. I was like, it's just this little thing that I can beat the crap out of whenever I want.
So cool, man. It's the best way anyone's ever described dealing with their anxiety in our show, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's such a great visual. You're already competing. You're already winning matches, losing matches, but you keep beating your anxiety in a jiu-jitsu match.
Yeah. Well, you beat your anxiety every time you walk away from it, right?
Yeah.
Some people don't get to walk away from it, you know? Yeah. Some people, it's too much for them, you know? But if you walk away from it, then and it just becomes weaker and weaker and weaker, and to the point now where I almost, like, you know, I have a healthy level of anxiety like the rest of us do, but it doesn't control me doing anything that I don't want to do or do want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it, man.
When I first started, Dan, I remember you used to have some epic battles on competition mats with Big Mick Wilson. Can you tell us about some of those?
He's a monster. Was
like legendary in Australian jiu-jitsu.
Mick's a monster. Mick was, he was such a, I mean, is he still, I don't even, is he still training or?
So, yeah.
Last time I heard he's blown his knee out or something, but yeah, he was a monster. We had some great battles and we had some really good training sessions too, because we were obviously from the same team. I don't know. There was I don't know if it would say like a rivalry with Mick, because I always admired Mick. I thought his jiu-jitsu was fantastic. I thought his period of jiu-jitsu that he came in was perfect timing for jiu-jitsu in Australia. They needed someone like that. There wasn't someone that was super dominant and then going overseas and showing that dominance overseas and showing what jiu-jitsu could be overseas. And wasn't until a little bit later when these other guys started doing it. You know, I'd done it earlier on, and also Pete obviously was before me, going to Brazil, and then and a lot of other guys going in at the same time as me and a little bit after me. But Mick really came in, and yeah, he had his place in jiu-jitsu history and always will. So it was I really admired his jiu-jitsu. And one thing I admired about Mick, he had this unbelievable dedication to whatever he did. Like, he was, you know, he was very strict on his diet. I came from a completely different background of just surfing every day, hardly going to school, wagging whenever I could to go surfing, skating. So, like, when all these guys came in and they were all, like, lifting weights and, you know, eating, like, five meals a day, I was just like, I don't even know what this is. Like, I just want to surf and train. So I used to walk up to the Melbourne club and there'd just be all these guys with huge muscles and that, and I'd be like, dude, I just this skinny surfy guy from – I didn't even know what weights were. Like, guys were telling me about kettlebells, and I'm like, I don't know what a kettlebell is. You know, I know what a cutback is. You know, I know how to do an air out of a skateboard ramp, and I know how to do jiu-jitsu, you know. And that. But he had this great work ethic, and he had this fantastic, like, yeah, I used to admire, you know, be sitting at the comp, and he'd finish a round, like a heat, and then he'd go up, and I'd go, what are you doing, Mick? You know, how you going? He'd be like, oh, hang on, I've got to eat. And then he'd eat. You know, he had to eat at certain times. And I was like, dude, you got way more discipline than me. I ain't like that. I can't do that. I'm like, yeah. So,
what about now? Are you disciplined now?
No. No, I'm not going to lie. My life is very, very cruisy. I get up in the morning and I surf. I guess if you surf every day, it's discipline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make Absolutely. Sure your daughter gets the bus. No, mm-hmm. I have my disciplines that I have to do. Like, I surf every day. I got me fishing and that. I try and train every day. At least, like, I do jiu-jitsu 4 to 5 days a week. So, you know, I'm still training. So, yeah, I'm disciplined in that sense. I still keep a good diet, but I've never been like a super, like, I've got to eat this and only this, and I've got to – no, I enjoy mm-hmm. myself. I don't drink and I don't smoke and I haven't drank or smoked for 15 years. So I guess that's discipline.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Awesome. And love it.
Speaking about now, Dan, what do you think about the scene in jiu-jitsu in Australia right now?
I love it. I love it. I think the scene's unreal. Like, I think, you know, having the privilege of being able to see it from almost 30 years ago and see what these guys are doing now. It's awesome. And, you know, guys like Lockie and that going out and making a huge impact on an international stage and then being able to transfer that into, you know, a really big internet presence. I think that's absolutely unreal. And it's, you know, and a lot of the other crew that are pushing the world championships and, you know, like, you know, when I did the Worlds, I was there as a blue belt, but it was very early days in jiu-jitsu, you know. And nowadays, like, it's so stacked, these divisions. Mm. There was a woman, I can't remember her name. She just won like silver or gold at the No-Gi Worlds from Dominance.
Adele von Ranger.
That's her. Yeah. I've watched some of her fights and like super technical.
She came up as a kid. So it's very similar to yourself.
Yeah, Australians are always, whenever they dedicate themselves, we're a small country and we have a very small contingency of jiu-jitsu people, but our level is extremely good.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about how far some of our no-gi competitors have gone, it was only a few years ago that those people took the gi off.
Yeah.
Gi jiu-jitsu was really dominant in Australia. And then only not long ago, they took the gi off, they dedicated, and already they've been able to go to some of the highest places in the world with their jiu-jitsu. So
it's true.
Guys like Craig Jones and stuff like that. So the rapid rate that we've been able to adapt to no gi jiu-jitsu and even gi jiu-jitsu, like, is phenomenal, you know? So, yeah, we're in a good spot. Australia's got a very strong level. And if you talk to most people around the world, we're kind of known as being, you know, good at jiu-jitsu, and we've got that sort of Aussie grit, you know. Yeah. So
you shared that Aussie grit. Obviously, sorry to cut you off, but, like, you were giving them trouble when you were a kid and you went over to Brazil. So it is something about Australian culture. Like, Even if we don't have the latest info, maybe, we're certainly going to give people problems, you know?
We make up with it in our toughness, that's for sure. That's right. Yeah, Aussies are tough. Like, you know, last time I went to Brazil, they were all calling me the white monster. They were like, oh, the monster's here, you know, because you would do, you know, 12 6-minute rounds in the middle with just black belts back to back, you know. Mm. You just, it's what we do. We go in and we go hard and, yeah. But I think now that we're right up there with the technical, like technically in jiu-jitsu, we're right up there. Like but Australians shouldn't think that they're behind in any way. Mm. You know, we are right there with the best in the world. And and with the talent that's coming through, like I watch a lot of the younger teenagers doing jiu-jitsu and stuff at the comps and that, and with their talent coming through, like there's some absolute weapons coming through. Like these young kids that we don't really know yet, and in the next three to 5 years, we're going to know who they are. And they're weapons, they're beasts. There's a lot of guys, yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a lot more opportunity now too for jiu-jitsu kids, right? Like, and jiu-jitsu competitors, you know?
Mm.
Before it was sort of seen as like a really niche thing, but now you talk to almost anybody and they all know what jiu-jitsu is. Like I went through high school and nobody knew what it was. Yeah. Literally not a person knew what jiu-jitsu was.
Mm.
You know, I used to have arguments at lunchtime because people used to come up to me and talk to me about Mike Tyson and Bruce Lee, and I'd be telling them this guy Hicks and Gracie would smash him. And they had no idea who Hicks and Gracie was. They were like, what are you talking about? And I was like, you guys don't understand, like, grappling is. Exactly. Yeah, that's what it was, you know.
I've got a quick question before Kimmo does a wrap-up question, and that is, how did it take us so long to have you on the show? Like, why did you block us for so long, brother?
I like to stay in my own lane.
Okay. You
know? Like I don't like to push myself out there too much. I've got a bit of a saying within my club where I feel like, you know, jiu-jitsu instructors should be less seen but always available to their students. You know, so as you become more of an instructor, you should take a step back, become more of a coach, and let your students become the front people of your club.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to sort of like live by that a little bit. I like to have my own time and be my own person. And I like to talk, but when you get me talking, I can't shut up. But just to get me talking is the hard bit. Yeah.
Got it.
So, that's it. You know, like I just like to stay in my own lane. I don't want to, I don't want to be like try to overtake anybody that's doing great things out there or anything like that. You know, stay in my surf. Go fishing, train jiu-jitsu, and enjoy what we've got going on down in Geelong, you know? Yeah.
Love it, man.
Well, we'll have to get you on a second time at some stage because I still think there's many more stories to share, much more information for you to share with our listeners. But just as a final, we've got just over 2 minutes. Do you have any words of wisdom, any final parting thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I think for people that really love jiu-jitsu, like we all do. Everybody who trains jiu-jitsu loves jiu-jitsu for their own way, you know, and their own reasons. But to try to allow yourself the freedom to try things and understand that you failure in those things is your best friend.
Mm.
Like try to change the way you look at failure and understand that failure is the success in your jiu-jitsu. If you don't fail and you're not trying, you will get stuck in a rut and you will not be able to break out of that rut. People call it ego, but it's not really ego. Ego is great for us to be able to try to learn new things and push ourselves and things like that, as long as it's healthy. But failure is what holds us back. You know, failure is the kryptonite to progress. Mm. So you need to understand that failure makes you stronger. And that's what I try to teach my guys. Like, if you want to open up and experience jiu-jitsu 100% and fully bring it into your body and into your blood and into your soul, you have to understand that failure is not it's not a dirty word, and you're not bad at jiu-jitsu for not winning all the time. Mm. You will get better, and failure is going to be your best friend in your training. So try new things, open up, and then that's going to bleed into your off the mat life as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much, Dan. Really appreciate it.
No worries, guys.
We'll chat in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we look forward to seeing you on the mats soon. Take care.
Cheers, everybody. No worries.
Bye.
Thank you very much.